Well, Susan Spencer is an algebra and geometry teacher at Rochester Prep High School, just completed year one. What convinced you to do this?
Well, Evan, I think for me, I am a high school dropout who eventually ended up earning a PhD. With that PhD, I adjuncted at RIT for 3 years, teaching experimental physical chemistry. I'm happy to take questions from callers on that. What I found when I was teaching there was that there was a lack of women and minorities in the STEM curriculum. And it broke my heart as a woman in STEM. And I wanted to help in a way that was closer to the problem. So I started looking around for high school positions, and I applied at Rochester Prep, and it's been amazing ever since.
You go back about a year now when you're getting ready for that. What do you think surprised you or you learned the most in year one?
That's a really long list, but to make it short, I think I was surprised by how purpose-driven this work is for so many people. I've never worked in a profession where people were so dedicated to the same mission, and the level of support that I received has been amazing, with professional development, mentorship, coaching sessions. But, you know, I really got to hand it to my kids. I knew they were going to be great. I didn't know that they were going to change my life and change who I was as a human being.
Give me your best moment or something that really stands out to you.
I would say there's a silly one and a serious one. The silly one would be when Old Town Road first broke. And our whole class did Old Town Road together. And these are ninth graders. They take themselves fairly seriously sometimes. But this was a moment when, like, we just let loose, and it was fantastic. On the more serious side, I think one of my best academic moments was in a geometry class when one of my students, we were learning about circles. And she raised her hand, and she said, "Wait, Dr. Spencer, is this why the circumference is equal to 2 pi r?" And I freaked out. I was like, oh my God, yes, this is it. Like, and it just rippled through the class, this kind of understanding, until like one of the very last kids stood up out of his seat and was like, oh my God, I get it now. And those moments of like deep academic passion from these kids just keeps me coming back every single day.
There's a moment at the beginning of any, either a unit or a new lesson, where you got to ask yourself, I mean, like, you know, these kids are capable, but you got to ask yourself, like, am I going to see that moment? Is this going to happen? Is it going to click? It has to be almost indescribable when you get that click, particularly if it's in a student who's had to work harder than maybe their peers at it.
I think the click is really important. And I think as teachers, one of our strongest assets is the ability to pivot and move and adjust what we're doing so that more and more and more kids have that click. I mean, I've started units. I started a unit on quadratic functions with what I thought was the way to start the unit. Lost about half the class.
I mean, how many ways with quadratic functions are there?
Oh, Evan, there's so many. Another show. But, you know, we reorient. We respond to the needs of our kids. We're not just driven by data. We're driven by what we see every single day in the classroom, so that we can get 100% of that classroom to college and beyond.
That takes some vulnerability and humility, because there's no teacher walks in with like an idea on how they're going to teach something and has to midstream go, well, it's my fault, not their fault. Like, this is really not working, and I'm going to change course. That takes some humility.
I think that it does, but it's also just informed behavior. It's teaching from the perspective of a scientist. If your hypothesis is not supported by data, you don't get mad at the data. You change your hypothesis and retest it. So for me, it's just more a natural way of doing things, I guess, because of my background. But yeah, you know, it can be hard. It can be embarrassing. It can be embarrassing if, you know, one of my coaches or my principal's in there watching me and I kind of have to course correct in the moment. But it's growth. And I know that my coaches are there to help me grow. so that I can help the kids grow.
All right, so let's get real. Again, don't have to name names, but give me a moment in your first year teaching that really rocked you or was really hard.
There's been a lot. I have one young lady who, she's listening, will know who this is, who lost a significant number of family members to a variety of things, and really struggled at school. It was heartbreaking. It's the type of thing that if one of my daughters was going through, I would be devastated and doing everything I can. So there were multiple moments like that. And, you know, the silver lining is that the kids felt safe to come and problem solve with me, to try and figure this out. Like, what do I do? How do I cope with this? What does this even mean that this is happening? But it's very difficult. There are amazing young people, and you want everything to go so well for them that when the world knocks them down a little bit, sometimes you just don't know what to do.
Does our society judge kids too harshly without knowing what they've been through?
Yes, unequivocally, yes. Especially the way that society judges teenagers. If you've forgotten what it means to be a teenager, the amount of cognitive development that is happening at a really rapid pace, physical development, emotional development, hormonal changes, I'm not going to go into everything, but like they have so much going on just from a biochemical perspective. And then you put them into environments that if you've forgotten about or you've never even visited, you don't know what these environments are, then yes, you're going to be hypercritical of a kid who takes a couple tries to pass a Regents. But you don't know that the success that he starts with that day is that he got to school, period. He got there. And that was a huge success for him just because of what he had to walk through to get to the school.
You going to stay with this profession?
I've found my calling. I love it, and I've never had a better job in my life.
Wow. Now, where would you fall in these surveys that say teachers are underpaid or teachers are not paid fairly?
I'm going to offer a similarly artful answer to my two colleagues. I'm satisfied at my school because I know how it all works. I know the path forward. I know kind of how things evolve and change for teachers as you move from first year to something else. In terms of, you know, colleagues across the country, I think that I don't even know that it's so much the fair pay as the fair treatment. You know, we're treated horribly in the media sometimes. And I look at, for an example, how teachers are treated in Japan. And I'm not saying that we need to go to that point, but to have more respect for the profession and the impact that the profession has socially, politically, I think would go a long way towards teachers who aren't being paid fairly yet. It would go towards pushing that fair pay to happen.